Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to Following On, and after India wrapped up an emphatic 317-run victory over England on day four, well, it gives us an opportunity to bring you one of the lunch features from the second test match. It was a great test for both of the wicketkeepers, Ben Foulkes and Rishabh Pant, showing individual masterclasses at times. So, today's podcast focuses on the art of wicketkeeping. Jarrod Kimber sitting down with a former England gloveman, Matt Prior, to discuss what it takes to keep wicket at the highest level, and how to keep successfully in Asia. Don't forget, we'll bring you live and exclusive commentary of the third test from Ahmedabad on Wednesday on TalkSport 2. KP joining the commentary team. But for now, let's bring you the art of wicketkeeping here on Following On.
Back, and he gets an under edge and is out, caught at the wicket. Shorter, quicker, smarter, too smart for Brathwaite. Good catching from Johnny Bairstow, as I've pointed out, looked tidy behind the stumps today.
Oh, he's got it stumped! And Rashid has gone straight past the charging Chandimal. Lovely glove work from Ben Foulkes. Not that it was his most challenging stumping.
Archer is in. Oh, that's an absolute beauty. And he's nicked off Dean Elgar. He's taken the glove. Josh Butler is diving away to his right, almost down the leg side.
Here is Butler.
Again, gone! What a catch! Ben Foulkes diving up to his left. Very, very fine catch with the man with the gloves on.
Watch it as Woggs goes in, takes the edge, caught behind Johnny Bairstow.
You're listening to TalkSport 2's cricket coverage. I'm Jarrod Kimber, and with me is Matt Prior, and we're going to talk about wicketkeeping, and wicketkeeping in Asia. My first question, though, is, man, when the first time you went over to keep in Asia, what was the first thing you noticed about how it was different to anywhere else?
The very first thing is how physically demanding it is compared to anywhere else. I remember people saying to me, oh, you know, keeping wicket at Perth, God, must be difficult. 30 yards back, ball flying through, coming at pace. And actually, it's complete opposite. What a pleasure it is to be stood that far back. You get plenty of time to see the ball coming through. You move your feet, less diving, so less physically demanding on your body, your shoulders, etc., etc. But more importantly, the ball's coming at sort of waist height, chest height the whole time. So it's your lowness to the ground is less. In the subcontinent, you are squatting and you're in that sort of posture, low posture position for a lot of the time. So you're either up to the stumps for the majority of the time. And if you're not up to the stumps, you're still so close. So Jimmy Anderson, Stuart Broad, whoever's bowling, their pace hasn't changed. They're still bowling 85, 88, 89 miles an hour. But you're now not 30 yards back, you're 10 yards back. So everything is happening far quicker. You get less time to react. And it just puts so much more stress on your body, your quads, your Achilles, knees, whatever it may be. So the physical demand is incredible. And then because you've got less time to react, it obviously puts a huge increased pressure on your technique. Because if you aren't technically sound, you're not going to get those half chances, or not even half chances. The regular chance feels like a half chance because you are so much closer and your reaction time is less. So the physical demand and then the demand on your technique are the two, you know, real things that stand out.
It's really interesting. You know, even factoring in that you are closer and that it's more demands on your body, even against the seamer. But I want to talk about the difference of standing up and not standing up. In county cricket, and I know there are some medium paces in county cricket which wicketkeepers come up to the stumps in, but in county cricket, 22% of the deliveries bowled are by spinners. Ben Foulkes at Surrey, because he has to, you know, face so many of Bats's balls, is up the stumps 26% of the time. In India, it's 50-50% in the last year, so 50% of spin. In Asia in general, though, it's 62% of the time. It is a completely different game for a wicketkeeper, almost as far removed as anyone else in cricket. When, you know, there is wicketkeeping in Asia and there is not wicketkeeping in Asia.
Yeah, certainly. And that, you know, you sort of look at someone like MS Dhoni, for instance. I mean, absolutely outstanding up to the stumps. And I will be shot down here incredibly. But standing back, he wasn't that good. You know, coming over to England when the ball was wobbling and different things, he got found out quite a lot. But up to the stumps, there was no one. He was so sharp, so fast. And again, it's what you're brought up with doing. You know, as you just said, the stats that 60-odd% of the time, you're up to the stumps. And then for an English wicketkeeper to... So, it's, you know, we'll have foreign keepers come over here and have to deal with a wobbling ball, which for us is something that you get you... Well, I'm not sure you ever get used to the wobbling ball. It makes you look stupid at times, but it's something that it doesn't surprise you. Going over to the subcontinent, your mind shifts because you're not dealing with a wobbling ball. In fact, you're not even stood back that often. You're stood up to the stump. So even your training, your preparation, everything you're working on is about that half chance up to the stumps, taking the catch, the stumping, the big high bouncing ball going through the gate, and how you... I mean, when I was working with Bruce French, we were trying to work on, you know, could you get to a point where actually you're taking the ball one-handed, stood up to the stumps, because it allows you to cover more area, more reach. Now, I never got the opportunity in the game to do it, but it's you're trying to challenge yourself to cover more ground, but it's all about up to the stumps and standing up to the spinners. The other thing is, in England, when the spinners are on, they don't tend to bowl as fast. I mean, we're seeing in this test match, Axel Patel, for instance, coming in, he's bowling 90 k's an hour. So in the subcontinent, the spinners are bowling much quicker, and it's still turning and bouncing. So it's that kind of culmination of added speed, added pace on the ball, added bounce, and added spin puts your technique under a huge amount of pressure. And that's why someone like Ben Foulkes will stand out, because he just makes it look so easy. He's so good. His posture, his technique. I mean, I watched him this game. This wicket is a tough wicket to keep on, and he's honestly made it look actually annoyingly easy.
No, he's been amazing. Here's one for you. I think you'll know this, because I'm sure Nathan Lehman, during his time with England, would have drilled this one into you. When wicketkeepers are standing back to seamers, they take 90% of their chances. So, you know, 9 out of 10, I think that's pretty fair. There's always going to be the odd wobble seam one, or maybe one keeps a bit low, or you're miss-sighted on it. Up at the stumps, do you have any idea what the percentage of catches is?
It's got to come down quite dramatically, I'd imagine. Probably 70?
65%.
65%.
Which is exactly the same for stumping. So the minute you go to Asia, you have to be thinking off the top of your head, you have to go from a world where you're thinking that you're going to take almost every chance that you're going to get, and change your mind a little bit to understand that you are going to miss at least 1 out of 3 chances.
Yeah, and as a player, you can never do that. I mean, you never go away thinking, okay, well, if I miss a couple this trip, it's all right. You know, you have to have the mental... I used to work... So Bruce French and I used to work on a 98% catch rate, basically. So throughout a year, throughout a series, every single ball that came to me or hit my gloves, I'd have to catch 98% of that. So if you think that's every throwing from the outfield, every stumping opportunity, every catching opportunity, I think one thing you've got to look at is up to the stumps. Okay, it's stumpings, but edges up to the stumps. I've you know, heard comment, oh, it's a drop catch. Well, you're so close, obviously stood up. You get a thick outside edge that hits you as a wicketkeeper, hits you on the outside part of your glove or your hand or even on the leg sometimes, and people go, oh, go down as a chance. Well, of course it will go down as a chance, but you do not have the time to react. So almost taking catches up to the stumps is almost easier in a way, because you have so little time to think about it. It's kind of the edge, you react, and then you try and feel the ball into the gloves, and it either sticks or it doesn't. You know, a lot of the time, every now and again, you might be able to adjust slightly, but I think that will be one of the reasons why those stats come down quite dramatically.
Yeah, I think the other one is that anyone who is marking that down, you know, any sort of analyst or, you know, fielding coach who will do it, it's actually very hard to tell how much the ball has deviated because your hands are so close to the actual bat. Whereas we've seen, we get a really good idea of how far it's deviated and you can make a call on the wicketkeeper. I think with a lot of those catches at the stumps, they're probably closer to half chances and we just don't know that. But it's just so interesting that, you know, the different method and the different mindset that you had to have. Obviously, you had a very tough tour in Sri Lanka. And, you know, sadly, I made fun of you about that yesterday. but I mean, this is my memory. You dropped Mahela, but there was another session, I think, where you maybe dropped two or three chances as well and missed a couple. And you just, it looked like there was almost no coming back from it. And you know, it almost ended your career, didn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing. I was not ready or good enough to be an international wicketkeeper playing Test cricket in Sri Lanka. My technique was not good enough, and I rightly got found out. Luckily, I, you know, didn't give up at that point. And you're quite right. I got left out, and that was the best thing that could have happened to me. And I had to make a call at that point because I had had in international cricket, I had had success with the bats. I'd scored 100. I think that series in Sri Lanka against Muralitharan, I averaged high 40, something like just under. I think I was second top run scorer, just behind Truscovic. So I knew that I could score runs at international cricket against the best in the world. I was confident with that, but my keeping was not up to scratch. And sort of, I had a bit of soul searching to do when I got left out. I was seriously thinking about giving up the gloves and just focusing on my batting and going and trying to score as many runs as I could and work my way back into the England team as a top order batsman. And I spoke to my mentor at the time and longtime friend Alex Stewart about it and a number of other people that I trusted on their opinion. And Alec actually said to me, look, how much have you actually given to wicketkeeping? How much have you honestly trained? And if I was being honest, which I was, it was probably 10%, 90% of my thought process, training, practice, preparation went into batting. And I probably gave keeping 10%. I didn't really enjoy keeping, if truth be told. I don't think many keepers do enjoy keeping because it's horrible. It's hard work. But I had to change my mentality and say, okay, well, if I'm going to be a batsman wicketkeeper and I want to be an international class or international leading wicketkeeper, I'm going to have to change a few things. I knew I was always been a good fielder. I knew I had the reflexes. I knew I had the athleticism. I just didn't have the technique. And that's when I made the call to get in touch with Bruce French. And we started our relationship. And he kind of, you know, we rebuilt, or should I say, we built a technique and went from there. And the one thing I was really pleased about was when I went back to the subcontinent after that first tour, I always kept well. And it was always on my list of, okay, we're going to India, we're going to Sri Lanka, we're going to Bangladesh. This is a time to see how far you've progressed because my first series was so bad. And I'll be the first one to admit it. I wasn't ready. But, you know, you've got to go back. It's what you do with that. What you do with that failure. Do you blame everyone else and try and pretend and make excuses? Or do you look yourself in the mirror and go, I wasn't good enough. I'm either going to get good enough or I'm going to go do something else. I chose to the first option of working as hard as I could to get good enough.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at UH1.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Well, you mentioned Bruce French. So we looked up, I think I looked up all the wicketkeepers who've batted below number eight since 1970, which is, I think it was 1968 was the last time we had a regular wicketkeeper who batted at 11. That was in New Zealand. And since then, obviously, it's been a number seven position and even higher at times. And the last wicketkeeper who regularly batted at number eight was Mark Boucher. And that was because South Africa had a million all-rounders in their order. And he also only did it until the year 2000. It's completely changed. But we have seen, and it's quite interesting, that India have gone with Rishabh Pant because they generally prefer Ridhwan Sahar, because Ridhwan Sahar is seen as a specialist keeper, even though he's a very good batsman as well, just not on Pant's level. Do you think in Asia a specialist wicketkeeper is a position that might occasionally pop up in Test cricket?
I think it's the one place that the argument is sound because of what we've just discussed, the fact that you are up to the stump so much, because you know that catch ratio standing back is 90%, but up to the stumps is 65. You want to have your specialist glovemen in there. But there's also an argument that, you know, there's for me, if you can score test, you've got to have a natural ability to be able to score test hundreds, but a wicketkeeper, you can improve and get yourself to a level. I mean, Alex Stewart is a good example. He was never a natural wicketkeeper, but he got himself to a place with his game.
You're saying you can improve wicketkeeping at a higher rate than you can improve batting?
Definitely. I think if you've got certain natural attributes, as reflexes, good. I mean, you have to be able to catch, obviously, but reflexes, athleticism, you can work on a technique. And I'm probably a good example of that. You can work on it, find a technique, get, you know, dialed into to certain basics of wicketkeeping that will give you as good a chance as any to perform well. I mean, I went, as you keep bringing up that Sri Lanka fiasco. You know, I was a horrible wicketkeeper, but I got myself to a point where people were saying I was the best keeper in the world at certain stages. So it can be done. But batting for me was always my first choice. And the wicketkeeping was the hard yards, if you know what I mean. The batting was the fun bit and the wicketkeeping was the hard yards. But even someone like Gilchrist, you know, Gilchrist was, he wasn't a natural, there were other wicketkeepers, I'm sure you'll tell me who they were, but there were other wicketkeepers in Australia who were pure wicketkeepers.
Darren Berry.
He's the name that always comes up. Pure wicketkeeper. And, you know, against Gilchrist, purely on wicketkeeping, you know, he would win. But would you play Berry in the subcontinent ahead of Gilchrist?
No, I don't think I would have.
Because of what Gilchrist brought in every other aspect, you know, with his batting, et cetera, et cetera. And I think, you know, that's the age-old argument. I think, you know, Butler, if we're talking about England players right now, Butler's wicketkeeping has improved. I think he's got better. He's now really, really sound wicketkeeper. Absolutely. I mean, in the first test, I thought he kept beautifully. But what Butler does bring is, you know, what was it, last summer test match against Pakistan. You know, if you don't have Butler, and he wins England that game through his batting. And that's the bit, really, that for me will always be the edge.
I want to talk about batting a little bit. So I figured that there were two, I was trying to work out if there was an effect of batting on wicketkeeping. And there is for individual players, obviously. We know that. We know Kumar Sangakkara and Clive Walcott, both, when they got rid of the gloves, their batting averages went through the roof. So we know that can happen. There's not many occasions where someone has had a long career batting in Test cricket with or without the gloves. When you go to first-class cricket, though, there's almost no difference. If a guy averages 35 with the bat and is a wicketkeeper, he averages them whether he's got the gloves or not over the entirety of their career. So then I wondered if there was an effect on batsmen and wicketkeepers in the fourth innings. And there is like the slightest little percentage drop that wicketkeepers have. So, you know, just to run you through the numbers, a top order batsman averages 43 in the first innings and he averages 29 in the fourth innings. And a wicketkeeper averages 39 in the first innings and about 25 and a half in the fourth innings. So there's a slight drop off there, but I would say that overall, wicketkeepers are actually holding their batting up far more than they probably get credit for. And so that, you know, we are picking players. It's not like if we took the, on average, if you took the gloves off 100 wicketkeepers, suddenly all their batting averages would rise.
No, exactly right. They wouldn't. I think, you know, I used to look at that stat a lot. The sort of the Sangakkara's Alex Stewart, again, is another example of batting averages that changes quite significantly when they do and don't have the gloves. And that was a stat that I always used as a bit of a motivator, because I was like, okay, well, I'm going to have the gloves, but can I compete with actually the Sangakkaras and the Alex Stewarts without the gloves? That's what I want to base myself on, is can I get to that point? And until the last sort of, 18 months or so, I was averaging mid-40s, somewhere around there. So I was kind of managing to stay up there. But I think there's, in international cricket, certainly the pressure and intensity is so much higher than county. And that's not me slamming county cricket at all. It isn't. It's just a fact. It's a reality. So I know personally, if I was playing a championship game for Sussex, for instance, I'd go in early. I'd do a gym session before the game. I'd get Bruce French down. We'd do a specific wicket-keeping session. I would then do the day's play and then do another gym session after the day's play. And that would be my day. One day of test cricket, you would get to the ground as late as you possibly could because you wanted to be in bed for as long as possible recovering. You'd do your warm-up. You'd do a very light sort of technical warm-up for your keeping or your batting. You would do the day's play, and then you would be absolutely shattered by the time you walked off the pitch. So just mentally, it is exhausting, and you can't really compare it. So I don't know if that would have quite a big influence on why there is a different, you know, why there is that difference where, you know, in international cricket there is a difference in the average, but in county cricket there isn't.
But it's also, don't forget, just on a very basic level, it's one extra day of wicketkeeping.
Yeah, exactly. It's the reason why it would be, it's the physical, you know, the physical tax on it and the mental tax on it, ultimately. So whether it's the extra day, whether it's the extra intensity, whether it's the pressure that, you know, you've got 26 cameras on you watching your every move. It all just chips away at your fatigue levels, and then your ability to perform ultimately in the fourth innings. But I think, you know, another role for a wicketkeeper, it's you want to be you're in the game all the time. You literally are, because you're keeping. So let's have a look at Ben Folkes now. This game, he's kept wicket brilliantly. It's hot, it's humid. He's out there for 100 odd overs, whatever it may be. You then come off the pitch, you put your keeping stuff to one side, and you've got to try and have some downtime and switch off from the game and not think about it. Two quick wickets fall, you're back in the game because you're getting your whites back on, you're now having to get your batting head on. So it's not just when you're out on the pitch, it's actually waiting to go into bat. You know, you're still engaged in the game, and mentally that's taking its toll. So, you know, the role of a batsman wicketkeeper is it is a genuine all-rounder. And as I say, you are in the game from, you know, first ball to the last ball. But that's, again, the mentality and the character of wicketkeepers usually is you want to be in the game, you want to be involved, you want to be influencing the game in a positive way for your team, and whether that's with the gloves or with the bat. And that, I think that's why also fourth innings, you probably find keepers tend to sort of get stuck in and find a way to influence a result.
Yeah. It doesn't work that way for everyone. Quinton de Kock averages 52 in the first innings of a test match, and he averages 19 in the fourth innings. Johnny Bairstow averages 51 in the first innings of a test match and averages 22 in the fourth innings. Matt Prior averages 55 in the first innings and 39 in the second. Now, I think some of this is technical, because we quickly talked about this off-air. You didn't get bowled in LBW that much, and I know Johnny Bairstow does. I can't remember Quinton's stats off the top of my head. But there's obviously, you know, there's obviously something else going on there. You thought that for you, it helped with picking spinners and with reverse swing, being a wicketkeeper. That may not be the case for everyone, though.
Yeah, it certainly was the case for me. I think the fact that you are, and also I look back to my early influences. So my early influences, my career at Sussex, Mushtaq Ahmed was a massive, massive influence on my career, certainly my young or early international career. He played at Sussex with us, and I had to keep wicket to Mushy. And he first came, when he first came to the club, he's like, all right, who's the wicket keeper? And I sort of put my hand up tentatively and we went into the nets and he said, right, young man, I'm going to bowl six overs to you. I'm going to try and, he always say, I'm going to try and dun you with the googly, or you've got to try and pick me, et cetera, et cetera. And we would work together every day on trying to pick, and I'd try to pick machine. Of course, the first session he did me every single time, I was absolutely useless. But over time, I learnt little intricacies of how to watch the ball in the hand. And then we had Rana Naved come and play at Sussex. And again, he was a huge influence. And our whole game, really, at Sussex, when we won the championship, was based around spin and reverse swing. And you look at the wickets around the world, a lot of it now is spin, slow pitches, reverse swing. So I sort of thought, okay, you know what? I want to really work on this, really make sure that I feel very, very comfortable in subcontinental conditions against spin, against reverse swing. And so that's what I really focused on. And I think also batting where I did at seven, you very rarely come up against a new ball, okay, a second new ball, certainly in England. But again, that's, you know, a lot of the time you're playing away from home. You're playing with a cooker rubber ball. It's, most teams are looking for a reverse swing. Most teams have got a spinner on. So sort of that's what I worked on. That's what I focused on. The wicket keeping element helped me so much by learning the pace of the wicket, because obviously you're standing there, you've got the best view in the house of what bowlers are trying to do, how they're, the areas they're trying to bowl in that are dangerous, but also you're stood behind a batsman who's had success. So you're watching, right, where are they scoring their runs? How are they scoring their runs? What looks risky? What doesn't look risky? So you're getting a great feel for where you can and can't score. So, and you're just logging that in your head. So when you then walk out to bat, you take that out with you.
Very, very quick question, and then we're done, Matt Prior. You have a million children. You encouraging them to become wicketkeepers or not to become wicketkeepers?
Not,
yes or no?
No.
Thank you very much for coming on.
You've been listening to Following On, Jarrod Kimber in conversation with former England international Matt Prior, discussing the art of wicketkeeping. For more shows like this, as well as exclusive interviews, in-depth analysis, match highlights, make sure you subscribe to the Following On podcast. And the best way of doing that is by downloading the TalkSport app. Don't forget TalkSport 2 bringing you live and exclusive ball-by-ball commentary of the third test match between England and India from our Ahmedabad. It gets underway at 9 a.m. on Wednesday.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.